What is up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the Deeper Than Dough podcast. Today, I have a special guest, Christian Brendel, who's we just found out 5 minutes ago. We're both in Utah, 20 minutes away from each other. So, Christian, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Bennett. Super happy to be here, super excited. And yeah, it's always good to talk to a neighbor, you know, somebody that's relatively in the area with us here. So, speak the same language.
It is fun. Utah's a very, I think, probably as much as any other state, or more than any other state, more a little tight-knit, probably because the religious basis here. Or the entrepreneur sales basis, who knows. But Christian, can we start off with a minute or two about your background, who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in the insurance business. So I own and operate an insurance agency that, from a 10,000-foot view, the best way to explain it is kind of more of an insurance conglomerate. So the insurance agency is a makeup of five total companies. Insurance agency, leads and marketing company, virtual assistant company, events company, and consulting company, and training company.
Wait, okay. Yeah, you just, that's a lot. Okay, no, I keep going and I'll conceptualize it maybe.
So this is our 11th year in business. And we primarily focus on, you know, the health and life space. Our bread and butter, I would say, is Medicare insurance policies for people that are 65 and up typically. We have a total of about 300 employees across all five companies. And we're heavy in the insurance space, and everything we do kind of ties back to insurance. And so while we have five different companies, they're all a part of, in a sense, the overall insurance agency that we run. And the insurance agency is called Everything Senior Insurance. So I've been doing the insurance thing since I was 21. I'm 32 now.
Okay, awesome. We have that in common as well, man. 32.
Really?
yeah, I'm 32 as well. Okay, five businesses, 11 years. What got you started in at 22 to say, hey, I want to start a business rather than, hey, I want to go to school? Or maybe you were maybe you did go to school. I don't know.
Yeah, I did a semester in community college. It's slick out here, and dropped out. Didn't really go to any of my classes. I was ditching, and I was like, what am I doing? So I dropped out. And I got into the insurance business because my dad was in it. My dad had a little agency that he had run for about 25 years. And so I came in and kind of originally learned from him. I wouldn't have probably known about the space other than that. And so I, you know, created my own agency, my own firm in a sense. And the kind of the background there, because people always ask, you know, is your dad still doing it? Is he still in it? About 3 years ago, because my company grew to be significantly bigger than his, we bought his company so he could retire. So we own his company now. So that's kind of with how the story ended in a sense. But I originally got into it because of my dad.
Cool. Okay, five companies. Can you list those off again? And then I want to ask kind of how those, I'm imagining you started with one 11 years ago. Then you get into the business, you're like, man, I'm hiring so many damn VAs. Why don't I just start a VA company? And then you're like, I'm doing so much of this. Why not just start it? And it kind of develops. But can you walk me through, list the five companies again and kind of went what the timeline was and why you chose to start them?
Yeah, absolutely. So the five companies are the insurance agency. So the insurance agency does a combination of sales policies to direct to consumer, has our own internal book of business, but also recruits and trains independent 1099 insurance agents across the country. We provide them with support and resources and training. And in exchange, we get an override when they do make sales. There's about 600 of those agents across the country that we partner with. So that's the first company. The second company is a leads and marketing company that does lead generation and sells those leads to insurance agents. We also use it to kind of supply lead flow to our internal agency and our internal agents. Virtual assistant company designed really catered to insurance agents. So kind of like a matchmaker company of sorts, you know, finds the needs that an insurance agent might particularly want or a particular client might want that's in the insurance business and helps find a virtual assistant that really supplies that type of expertise. We run an event company. So we started doing a conference. This will be the fourth year. We do it in June every year. And so we started doing a conference for Medicare agents specifically. And so agents buy tickets, and they come out from all over the country, and we get industry experts, and it's kind of a two-day affair of sorts. You know, it's a lot of main stage presentations about how agents can grow their business better, more effectively, more efficiently. So that's kind of that business. And then we have a training and consulting business. And that business is kind of when people want to hire me one-on-one to consult for their agency, maybe do private calls with me. They don't have any other kind of business relationship with us. And we also provide courses and, you know, different kind of training platforms mm-hmm. through that company. So those are the five. How that to and then circling back to your second question, how did that kind of all transpire? I started the insurance agency 11 years ago. So 2014 is when I started in the insurance business. I started the insurance agency and, you know, I kind of really only did that for a long time, for probably about 7 years. And the virtual assistant company and the lead company, actually, we started working with them and really owning those companies because we went through a merger about a year and a half ago. So January 2024, we merged with a really good friend of mine who's my partner today. And he's the one that actually founded the leads and marketing company. And his background is kind of similar to mine. He started as an agent. He found out that if he got virtual assistants to kind of help him and, you know, schedule appointments for him and, you know, kind of just help him out in his business, he could sell way more insurance. And then kind of be, you know, almost just from a natural progression, he ended up creating those companies and really providing innovative solutions for agents. And then he grew that to multiple seven figures in revenue. And then we merged the two companies together.
I was going to ask about, have you heard of Pareto's principle, the 80-20 rule or whatever? Have you heard of that?
Yeah.
Like 80% of your, in this case, my question would be, does it apply here? Does 80% of your revenue come from one of your businesses?
Yeah, I would say in our case, probably not. And I think it's a little bit of a unique thing, right? Because the insurance agency and the lead company and the marketing company and the virtual assistant company, those three together probably bring in, I would say probably 80% of our revenue as a total company. But those two companies were separated, of course. They started on their own. Both of them are about the same, you know, age in terms of when they were founded. So the lead company, I think, was started in 2015. So it's about 10 years old. The insurance agency is 11 years old. So those two companies really grew on their own. And then when we combine them together, that's kind of creates a little bit of a unique dynamic from that perspective. Yeah,
for sure. It's a little bit different. And really what I wanted listeners to hear is, okay, five sounds like a lot. Why? What's the timeline? Did you do it all at the same time? And if I could reiterate what I heard was, no, I started with one and I lasered in on it for 7 years. Then I did really well with that. Then it was, okay, how do we branch out? And then you slowly started branching out. And one of those was a merger. And because of that merger, then you're acquiring different revenue streams. What you're doing is the exact same thing that which I've always done. It's like get a lead because I had a solar company, a solar brokerage, and now I'm doing the same thing with franchising. Mm. You know, get a lead, cultivate it, get them on a call, you know, close it, collect the revenue. In solar or especially in franchising, the lead is where the value's at. You know, you can get paid $40,000 to close a freaking franchise sale. But people don't do it because they don't know how to find a lead. It's not like selling a franchise is any harder than selling pest control door to door, you know, but it's kind of that lead. So I guess the question, like for me, I've had a lot of companies come up and, hey, can you do leads and things for us? It's like, no, I just want to give you a franchise contract and take the full commission. Cause I know it only costs me about 2,000 in ad spend and then I'll pay a sales rep 4,000 and then I keep the rest because all that value is the lead and you could get good sales reps and keep good sales reps and pay them a fifth of whatever else as long as the volume's there, you know, as long as they're making 200K, it doesn't matter, you know, 30 hours. Like, so that's kind of what I'm setting up. And my question to you is, why did you decide to go and sell your leads to other insurance agents and train others rather than just doing it internally? Because it kind of sounds like franchising. It's like, no, I'm franchising it to other people, which obviously I understand because I also have gone through that.
Yeah, I love the question. And it's a great one, I think, for your audience to hear. I think it is very similar to franchising, right? Because everything that we do internally that involves working with other insurance agents and agencies is really trying to help them duplicate the success we're having internally with our insurance agency. So like to talk about some of these other businesses, and you're 100% right. For me, I didn't do anything else outside of the insurance agency for the first 7 years of being in business. So to talk about some of the other companies, I'll circle back in a second to the lead company, but like my consulting company, that's the first set other company that I ever created, aside from the insurance agency. That one kind of came a little bit almost by I almost felt kind of like it just kind of naturally progressed. It wasn't something that I went out of my way to create. So, we started building the insurance agency, and through the different ways that we were, branding and marketing, we were doing some things, especially on social media with, paid ads, Facebook ads, Google ads, organic SEO at the time, content marketing. We were doing some things in a very old space that most people in our space just didn't understand. Insurance is typically very behind in normal business trends. And so, we were bringing stuff that wasn't necessarily new to the business world or innovative, but in our space it was, right? And so, we grew the insurance agency, and we were doing really well. And, we started kind of almost like in a sense, offering to teach other insurance agents and agencies what we were doing. And that was kind of what that contract model looked like, where they in the insurance world, everything is based off of contracts, and especially our type of insurance. So, let's say an agent is selling for Aetna or Humana or someone like that, they would get their contracts through us instead of directly through an insurance company, and we get that override. But we also had agents that would come to us and say, "Hey, listen, I think what you're doing is fantastic. I don't want to align my contract with you. I have another relationship with someone else. I don't really want to sever that. That being said, I'd love to be able to get access to your material, your trainings, whatever it is. Is there a way I can pay you for it?" And at that point in time, it was like, in my mind, at that point in time, I was like, "Oh, I'm like, you do that?" I'm like, I didn't even really conceive that as a possibility. And so, we started kind of taking on consulting calls, and we started, selling our courses for a paid price. And as time went on, that just kind of organically grew without really much attention or effort from us. And it ended up really eventually, becoming a revenue stream that was strong enough that warranted probably breaking it off into its own corporation. So that's kind of where all the businesses kind of came from. On the leads and marketing side of things, that company was created in a sense, because it was working so well for my partner, who was an agent at that point in time. And he just made the decision that, I have something that's very unique, something that works. And I think I'd rather, help other agents with their marketing rather than just keep selling insurance myself. And that's kind of the pathway that he took. And so, that business is one of those things where we use it heavily for our own internal marketing for our company, but it has this 10-year track record of customers that want to buy leads. And so when we merged, we didn't want to just close the doors on that for those customers. We wanted to keep those relationships strong. So it kind of comes from to answer your question directly, it kind of comes from the perspective of like these two businesses having that trajectory, and not wanting to really just completely close the door on what those businesses already
Yeah.
did.
Well, let's say that that marketing lead and marketing business wasn't doing the outreach to, or wasn't doing it for anything other than internal. It's still another revenue stream without going, because, okay, serial entrepreneurs, does it exist and what does that mean? The advisor that I got, which I feel like he's the best advisor in the world, he's like, no, serial entrepreneur means you start one business, nail it down, and then move on to the next. You either sell it or replace yourself. But Elon Musk didn't start SpaceX and Tesla and Neuralink at the same time, And it's because he made me. I had sold my solar company, and I still had some ties there with stock and stuff. And he's like, if I'm going to be advisor for Dirty Dough, you have to kind of, I mean, not kind of, you have to 1,000% leave all of that behind, because he wanted me hyper focused. Now in Dirty Dough, we did build a logistics company and a food manufacturing, and there was different entities, but it was us, all under one umbrella. And I'm hearing that as very similar to you as well. It's like, yes, there's five different things, but I was already doing leads for myself and I didn't want to scale that. So why not give it to the blueprint? Again, back to Solar, did the same thing. I had my own sales reps. They sold for me, or we'd go recruit teams. And it's like, keep your team name, keep whatever you want. Just use our installers and we'll give you a you know, a lower price. And we take a cut. So I guess what I'd like to point out here is, yes, it's five companies. And yes, we did that with Dirty Dough and the Solar and everything, but it's finding what you're already doing and saying, hey, if I already have this plan 80% built out for my sales reps or 100% built out for my sales reps, if I only adjust it 10, 20%, I now have a thing that I know works. I have the track record. I have the customer testimonials, which are my sales reps. And now I can take it to market, but it's not a new product. It's what you've already been using and then just giving it to others, which going back, I guess my last little thought on here is, why franchise something? My advice is, if you want to scale quickly, you want to franchise it. If you have a little bit, if you have more money, and you could go a little bit slower and afford that and you're fine with that, don't. Because with franchising, you're finding all of these partners throughout the nation that says, you know, I'll invest with you and I'll run it. And that's what you're doing as well, just not under the franchising law, but same thing. So maybe we should talk about this and how to officially franchise it if you want.
Yeah.
Okay. So I want to ask, you mentioned dropping out. Did you get any kickback from family, parents when you dropped out?
Oh, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Like, my parents wanted me to go to college, wanted me to go to school. So I think they were afraid of me just not having much of a direction, which I think at that point in my life, I didn't. I was 19 when I dropped out. So I started my business at 21. So I had 2 years or so where they were right. You know, I kind of did just float a little bit and not really do a whole lot of things. I think
the main reason why there was push on that one though. I mean, not to floating around for 2 years, would you have put that same time, energy, and effort to get you to be interested in insurance if you were stuck in school for 46 hours a week? You know what I mean?
I think it's great.
You do nothing to figure out what you want. And
yeah,
parents, I mean, I would worry about 19-year-olds because no 19-year-old has a plan, and you're not supposed to have a plan, I don't think, because you don't know what you want yet. How are you gonna have a plan if you don't know what you like yet? You know?
I think it's a great point, and I would argue too, right? Like me in my version of school, right? I think unless you have a very specific career choice that involves school, you know, what I know today is if I had just stuck in school, it would have been really as beneficial as me doing nothing, you know, in my opinion. But to answer your question directly, you know, their mindset and their mentality, that's why there was pushback there. But it ultimately ended up being a great thing for me.
Yeah. You know? I was just wondering, I mean, I did the same thing. I graduated. I mean, I dropped out a semester away from graduating, you know, just.
Kind of oh, wow. Hey, you went farther then. Yeah.
You got the pushback. And for me, I kind of brushed off because I'm like, I'm going to do whatever I want anyway. And that's kind of like my mentality. I'm like, I didn't drop out because I didn't have good grades. I was getting straight A's doing pre-med, you know? So it's kind of, let me ask you the question. You have kids, right, Christian?
Yes, I have a daughter right now. And then I have a son who will be born probably within the next 30 to 40 days from when this is filmed. Sweet. Yeah. Awesome.
So the advice that you would give to your kids on school, what would that be as far as, you know, higher education?
You know, I would tell my children that, you know, if you want to be a doctor, if you want to be an attorney, you know, there are specific careers where it's going to be a necessity and it's important and you have to go through it. But outside of that, you know, I don't find any value in it. I think life experience is going to be infinitely more valuable than classroom experience.
We'll circle back to this in a second, but I've always answered the same thing that you've answered up until a year ago. And then it's like, do not go to law school. Do not go to accounting school because ChatGPT is already better. It's already better.
You know what I mean?
Do not. And in 8 years, could you imagine in 8 years what it's going to be like? Cause you know, imagine 2 years it's advanced, you know, so much. And I am wondering where higher education has a place with AI being able to custom teach you with access to 1,000 times more information than your professor has instantly.
So
you know.
So let me ask you a question. Do you think people will be able to let's take my daughter, for example, right? My daughter's six. When she's 18, so 12 years from now, do you think we'll be at a place where it'll be socially acceptable, instead of going to college, going through all of that song and dance that involves that, to, let's say, be an attorney, you can go through some kind of AI program to kind of educate you on anything you need to know in
That's a good
half
question.
The time or a third of the time?
I mean, do you need the human, and do you even need the human involvement? What's the human involvement going to correct for that's better than the AI? I don't know if that exists.
Yeah,
when you think
that's a great question.
I have a rash on my arm, so I go to the doctor. Well, the doctor's trying to remember 10 years ago from a book that he probably took the test on once, because there's how many rashes are there? There's a million. You know what I mean?
Right.
Where chat or where an AI can compare it to a million images within seconds.
Yeah.
And say, it's probably this, but it could also be these. And I mean, it just gives you, I don't know. I talk to ChatGPT every day. It's like my best friend. So
as do I.
The future is crazy. I mean, talking about like education, again, a little radical, but like, look where we were at 5 years ago and 10 years ago. Where are we going to be at in 5, 10 years? I don't think my daughters or my, so I have an 8, 6, and 4. I don't think they ever need to learn how to drive. I haven't really touched my steering wheel and since November is when the latest Tesla update. And I'm like, okay, I'm sold. I'm going to do full self-driving. And it is phenomenal. Today it's phenomenal. You don't have to, I could put the address anywhere in the United States and it'll take me there and it'll take me to all the chargers. And I don't have to touch, as long as I'm looking for it, I don't have to touch the freaking steering wheel. And then you get to like, oh, well, at least they need to learn basic reading and math and writing. And I'm like, but do they?
Right.
Well, I still don't know how to type, you know,
right,
like,
I don't know how to type. I think about this too. Like, I would think about this when I was in high school. You know, I'd be sitting in a trigonometry class or something like that, and I'd be thinking, and I was always getting in trouble. I was that kid, because I'd ask the teacher, I'd be like, why do I need to know this? What is the purpose of this? You know, you
won't always have a calculator in your pocket, son. And you're like, wait a second.
I'm like, are you sure about that?
So, I mean, because you think like reading, I don't know if you've seen the Google glasses that have came out, but like,
yes. Yes.
The augmented reality and virtual reality is coming, but it's like, I don't ever type. I only do voice to text when I'm texting people lengthier and I don't want to have to do spell check, whatever. I just go to ChatGPT and say, help me refine it. And then I send it, or you do the voice memos, right? And then every meeting is always recorded now, and you can use those transcripts to do a million different things. I don't know. Here's my question with AI though, as it relates to insurance.
Yeah.
How's it going to affect insurance? What's the future with insurance and AI?
It's a discussion that's had in the industry often, all the time, as I'm sure it is with every industry at this point, right? Because obviously, if an AI can replace a doctor, it can certainly replace an insurance agent. So a lot of the focus right now, I feel like, with insurance is, I think we're going to have phases of this, right? We're going to have phases of where we're in infancy, I think that's probably where we're at right now. Then I think we'll have phases where you're going to have, you know, insurance agencies, you know, my contemporaries, you know, companies like mine, that find ways to incorporate it at a high level to increase efficiencies, to maybe even potentially replace staff. It answers your phone, all different kinds of things. And those agencies are going to wipe out all the agencies that aren't using it in any capacity. But eventually, do we get to a place where the AI can be the agent? And that's where it gets a little more complicated, right? Because in my world, the benefit of the insurance agent or agency is that they're a one-stop shop that can simplify complex options in a way that's digestible and understandable, but show you all of your different options in one place. Whereas if you call up an insurance company, they're going to do a great job of explaining to you their product, but they're not going to tell you anything about the competitor's product. And so instead of making 10 phone calls, you talk to one person for 45 minutes, you get more, if not better information, unbiased information. That's kind of the idea. Can an AI do that? Certainly. There's going to be companies that figure that out, and the AI tool is the one that's going to be doing that instead of a human being. with our market, our target demographic, with what we primarily do in our bread and butter of Medicare, we're mostly dealing with seniors.
Yeah.
You know, 65 and up.
To adapt. Yeah, that's a really good point.
Right. So I think in our world, we probably will have a situation where every generation of seniors that ages in is going to be that much more tech savvy, just like social media, right? Than the generation before. So eventually you'll have a generation of people that get Medicare eligible age that are used to working with AIs, and you know, but I do think because of that, the insurance space probably has longer than a lot of other spaces in my demographic, I suppose. Like I think you'll see car insurance get replaced faster than you would Medicare, I feel like, just because of the age demographic.
Yeah, and I feel like there's some good softwares out there right now that'll, you know, kind of compare them all or whatever. So shifting gears to what you mentioned at the very beginning, that you bought your dad's company and was able to retire him. Was that a goal for a long time, or that kind of, yeah, tell me how that sounds like somebody's lifelong goal. That was it. I want to retire my parents, you know, and you achieve that. So talk to me about how that goal kind of developed. And then I want to get into how did it feel afterwards? How long did that feel? And how long did that great feeling last?
Yeah. So I'm going to try to answer this without going off into the weeds of it. So my father, I think it was a good thing. I think it was good for him. I think it was good for me. It was good for us because we bought a business. You know, we buy multiple insurance agencies. We bought two in the last 6 months that were probably together, probably about $600,000-$700,000 in revenue that we awesome. Acquired as so for us it was good just from the standpoint that we acquired another agency. That's a great way in our world to leapfrog and grow leaps and bounds just kind of overnight with one transaction. I think for him, he was very on the fence about it. And we had lots of conversations for many years about it leading up to that. He was just, you know, he had one foot in, one foot out, because he had been doing it at that point 35 years. And he just didn't like the idea of not being involved. He's kind of a control freak, didn't want to lose control, that kind of thing. But it ended up being a very good thing. But I don't think that feeling of like, oh, wow, look at this, kind of settled in for him. Probably until maybe a year after it happened, because, you know, I think he found himself enjoying retirement more than I think he thought he would, not having to work, not even have to worry about things. When we bought his agency, it was kind of in a free fall. His clientele from when I started had dropped off about 50%. His business wasn't growing. And when you're dealing with a senior demographic, it has to grow because you have mortality and all kinds of other things that are working against you on your clientele. And so, you know, his business was growing. At that point, he had no employees. So he was trying to do every little thing himself, you know, answering customer service calls, all of those things. And so, you know, I think he almost felt like he didn't have a choice, you know, in the matter, because not that I was pushing him or anything, but I think he felt that way because he just felt like, I can't continue. I'm, you know, at my age, I can't continue to operate this way, and I don't want to grow, and I don't want to hire, and I, you know, and so I think it was more of a delayed effect of it. For me anyway, it wasn't a goal of mine originally. My goal was I wanted to grow my business as big as possible. But one thing I learned early on with me coming in, I'm a very hard-headed person, and so is my dad, is probably where I got it from. And, you know, I had very specific ideas of what I wanted to do to grow my business, and I had my own business, but my dad is almost my first kind of teacher and mentor. You know, he was very against it. He wanted me to grow the old school way, and, you know, thought that was the only way, you know, knocking on doors, making cold calls, all of those things, direct mail cards. And so, you know, for me, I didn't really have a great desire to take over his business because I thought it would come with a lot of, you know, pain in the neck, feelings, I guess, if you will. But, you know, all in all, I think it worked out to be a good thing for both of us, but probably isn't what it sounds, you know, from it being like, oh, wow, this is this, you know, long-term aspirational goal that we reached. It was kind of more just like, listen, you want to get out of the business?
Yeah.
We could buy your business. It's still an asset. We'll buy it. We'll take it over.
I mean, how many people in his scenario, if you had 100 people his age with his clientele, declining business, have any sort of exit? I have
Very,
no
very,
idea,
very
but I
few,
would say
very
less than
few.
5% even look for it. Most people just close down their business. If they don't have a kid to hand it off to, it's just, hey, when I'm ready to retire, I'm done. And that's it. You don't get anything else. So that was something else that stood out. Now, you mentioned your dad, your first teacher in business. Similar with me, it was my brother, though, partnered up with him, and that was like the best thing to go into business with somebody you love and trust. What did you learn from him about joy and fulfillment? Typically in the older generation, not always, but it's like I'm gonna work and chase, the goal. I'm just right around the corner from having everything perfect, and you do that till you retire, and then you're disappointed because you never reached that golden nugget that gave you everlasting happiness. And then you kind of go through that, midlife crisis because you're like, crap, what do I do? I don't know. What'd you learn from your dad regarding that, both, good or bad?
Yeah, I think with him, what I learned, I want to preface my comments by before I kind of get into it by saying I learned a lot from my dad early on. I learned a lot about my dad for in terms of, hard work. I learned a lot about him. About the foundations of my industry and everything like that. So he was incredibly valuable for me at that point. But I also learned a lot about what I didn't want to do with my business. My dad built his agency to a certain point, to where he was a certain size. He was about 15 years in, and at that point he just decided, he had at this time he had a part-time assistant. He had a little office. And he just stopped growing. He just was like, I'm just gonna chill here. And a lot of entrepreneurs do this. A lot of business owners do this. I'm cool. I'm comfortable. I'm just gonna stay right here. And I guess that's fine, but in my opinion, it's not fine because you get to a point where, you're just maintaining, but it's almost like as it goes, I'm a big believer in business, and I'm sure you are too, Bennett. You're not ever staying the same in business. You're either moving forward or backwards. There is no staying where you are. And I felt like his business could have become something really special with the foundation that he built if he had kept going and innovating and finding new ways to kind of grow. So I learned from that. I learned that I didn't want that because I saw his business declining even when I started. It was just in that process. I also learned he wasn't great with managing people when he did have employees. And so I kind of learned, things that I didn't want things to look like when I started working with my own staff and hiring employees. And so I think the biggest things I learned from him on what not to do is I wanted to go big, because if I'm going to do this and I'm going to work hard, I want to create something that's a real valuable asset that, I'm going to have the options of whatever it is I want to do. Maybe I want to exit my company, whatever it is, right? Like, but if I'm going to chase something like that, I really have to not have the mentality that I'm just going to get to good enough. I have to keep pushing beyond that. So
Yeah, let me dive into that a little bit. I think that's actually what I'm referring to, that I think is more common in the older generation, like keep going because I'm almost there. And you're almost there for your entire life. And if but which is totally fine, because I'm like, I sold my business in September, I already have another one doing, and I'm like, I told myself I was gonna take a year break, didn't, because it's fun and exciting. But I do feel like I've been able on this one to really detach. Like I already had the boundaries of work, and now I'm not working Fridays, and now I'm closer to part-time. I was like, if I could run my business as big as I'll run it as big as I can at 20 to 30 hours a week, or as big as I want to. How do you, I guess, stay motivated? So like I changed my target from first, I wanted to be a millionaire. Achieve that when I sold the solar company. I'm like, crap, that wasn't, it's not that cool. It just feels good for a little bit. And then I changed it to joy and fulfillment. And then now I could kind of like, I'm not after any goal other than joy and fulfillment. And that's at a day-to-day basis. So I don't really do the long-term thing ever, which I think it works. Just like what you said, like business is always changing. Life is always changing. You always have to be going with the flow. Like if something's changing, you just go with it. I think you typically, you know, strategically. So anyways, love to hear your feedback on all of that. Like, how do you not be on the hamster wheel till you die? And you're just right around the corner from having the biggest business, you know, or whatever that metric is.
I think for me, a lot of entrepreneurs build themselves a job. I'm sure you'd agree with me on this, right? And I think you build a job when you don't have infrastructure in place that can allow the business to run itself. So if, let's say, you were out of your business, for anybody that's listening to this, if you were out of your business for 8 months for whatever reason, what would happen? Would it just completely collapse and fall apart? If it is, and let's say, you know, you're the one doing every little thing, you're in it in the day to day, right? You're working, the old saying, right? You're working in your business, not on your business kind of thing. For me, I feel like at this point where we're at the company right now, you know, our company this year will probably do 7 or 8 million in revenue for the whole year. We're kind of on the brink. I don't think we'll get there this year, but I think we'll get there next year. Probably about 8 figures in revenue. We can sell it really at any point that we want. We have conversations routinely about that. So I think for me, joy and happiness comes to where I can work in the business as much as I want. And I do get a lot of joy and fulfillment from my work. You know, a lot of what I do today is I work with our agent partners. I work on being an operator in the business, but I'm not on the front lines. I enjoy that a lot. It's very fun to me. And I love working with the agents that we partner with because it's fun to see them really, you know, connect the dots and implement a strategy that we might share with them and just really see them just kind of take off. That's the best for me. I love that. I love when we work with a new agent that we might hire in the office and, you know, they start making sales and they start making, you know, really good money. And that's fun for me. So I love all of that. But in addition to that, I don't want to be forced like I used to be years ago. You know, if I am on vacation, I have to take client calls or I have to be answering emails or, you know, late at night on the evening, I have to be, you know, responding to 50 emails or on the weekends or on Sundays. So I think it's almost like there's an infrastructure where I can come in, I can do my work, I can be involved, I want to be involved, but it's not to where it's running me ragged and I haven't created a job for myself. So I think to kind of summarize, for me, it's, you know, I want to spend time with my family. I want to spend time with my wife, with my children, with, you know, friends, relationships I have, everything like that. I want to work. I don't know what I'd do if I didn't work. I like to work. But I haven't cornered myself. And a lot of businesses, they corner themselves. They really don't have a way out. Yeah. You know, in a sense. It's
that e-myth revisited. Like, I'm a good technician. Totally. I'm a baker, so I want a bakery. I'm a plumber, so I'm going to open a plumbing business. And it's just a different skill set. And then they're going into business because they like being a plumber, right? And then they realize it's all these other things that it's not what they like. So 1000% proponent on that, stepping out of your business. I mean, I think I had a conversation just yesterday with my two partners on the broker side. Cause I have one more meeting, like a weekly meeting that I have. I'm like, it's me. I don't want anything that I have to be on ever. I love to work on it because I just like wake up, have a little bit more space in the calendar. It's like, hey, what do I want to do today? Not what do I need to do? But I don't think that, yes, it's because of, you know, business is going good and revenue and all that. But at the same time, it was just a mentality switch for me because I did that a few years ago. And the more I step away, here's my question. Looking back, did you have to respond to those emails? Because you said you did. And I say that I do too. You know, working the ADR, did you have to, or did you just tell yourself you had to, right? Like, what would have happened if not? Because I don't care at all. If anybody needs anything at 4:30, I don't care who you are. It'll wait till tomorrow. And if it's the weekend, I don't care who you are. And even when it comes to selling a company for 8 figures, like even then I didn't work the weekend and everything just like, it falls into place. You know, people make up all these bullshit deadlines on this and that. And it's like, no, I'm going to work in my little box. And if it doesn't fit, it just doesn't fit. And that's been a really, really life-changing experience for me. And looking back, I'm like, yeah, I think I did it wrong. I think I believed that I had to work hard to be successful. I think I believed that I had to be up earlier, you know, all the hustle culture BS that I don't believe in anymore.
The cliches. Yes. And all that. Yeah, I think there's a lot of cliches out there. Like on the specific question, right? Like looking back, did I have to reply to the emails? Sometimes not. But there were certainly times where if I didn't reply to that email, let's say on a Sunday night or clean out my emails, I had such a stacked day already on my schedule for the next day that something wouldn't get done.
Yeah.
You know, so like the email, like it's that thing, right? Where you've built a business that's doing well, but you haven't put the pieces together and developed the infrastructure, having the proper staff, having the proper SOPs, having the proper systems and processes, automations, everything like that, to where, you know, you're not so log jammed, I guess, in a sense, right? So like there were certainly times in the business where, you know, do I want to reply to the emails Sunday night? Probably not. Would I like to do them the next morning? Probably. But the emails have to get done. They have to get done. They can't be ignored.
But do they? Why do they have to? You know what I mean? Like, if you want that sale, but do you want that sale, or do you want to set boundaries with your family? And again, I'm sure. We're both talking to our past selves, and I did the same thing. But that's what I'm thinking. Like, yes, they have to get done if I wanted to make that sale or hire that sales rep to get more money. But why do I want more money? To be with my family. So there's no way that I'm going to sacrifice family time today to maybe earn family time with them later. I already earned it. It's gifted to me free. Mm-hmm. You know, I just need to take it. So that's kind of more of where the question is coming from. And feel free to challenge it. I'm making this up and trying to explore.
So here's where I would push back on that. I think to me, if you have a client, let's say, and for me, it was usually clients at that point in time, it's just bad business to ignore people and to not do what you say you're going to do.
I'm not saying don't say what you're going to do.
Right. So, but to me, the problem wasn't at that point in time that the emails are getting replied to. It's that I'm the one replying to them. Mm-hmm. That's what the problem was.
Yeah. And I'm kind of going back to, I don't know if you did. I felt like I killed myself with this last business, 30 Dough. It was just too much, too quick. I mean, we opened up 100 stores in 2 years, and I've never opened up a store. And I was stressed and thinking I was going to die because I wasn't ever going to make payroll, you know? So that's more like
we've all been
talking back to myself. I told myself I would. So yes, always do what you say you're going to do. And this is what I say I'm going to do. I communicate during business hours. Nobody ever expects me to communicate otherwise, whether it's an investor or anybody. So it's not don't respond when you say you're going to respond or anything. It's just, do you need to grow? For me, it was like, I need to grow fast so I can't let go. But then reevaluating, it's like, that doesn't make sense, because growing fast is sacrificing time with my family today and happiness today for it later. But again, I already have it today. So like, I could have just, could I have grown a little bit slower and not made up all the things that had to get done? Because there's no such thing as anything that has to get done, right? That's made up. We make that up. The only thing that has to get done is whatever you say has to get done.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think when I look back and when I reference those types of instances in my business, like I said, you know, to me it circles back to there wasn't enough infrastructure, and it's because I didn't want to hire people. I didn't want to spend the money to do what I needed to do to build the infrastructure. But like, there were certainly days in years ago where like I said, for me, it's a client thing. In insurance, it's all, you know, you have ongoing clients, you know, you have passive renewal income when you keep clients in the books. So you want to do that. It wasn't necessarily to acquire a new client necessarily. Maybe at some points it was, but you know, let's say there's 50 emails in the inbox and your Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday are full. You have to figure it out, right? Like, so
or you don't, and you just push everything out to the, but yeah. And then maybe it implodes, because I'm trying to give advice against what I did, because I'm trying to give advice against the stress that I felt. But hey, maybe at the end of the day, you need that. So then you can look back and be like, I'm never doing that again. Just like what you said, I learned from my dad what I didn't want to do. I learned from pushing too hard what I don't want to do. But now I do have the skill set, the reputation, and the social media following that now I could, I mean, Yeah, so scratch everything I said. I guess, I don't know.
Well, no. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that. I'm on the same page with you to where I think the goal needs to be that you're not taking time on a Sunday night away from your family replying to those 50 emails. I think where we differ is just the way that you get there. To me, like my when I look back on it, it's like didn't have to be that way, but there were things I could have done in terms of strategically building my organization to where there wasn't so much on me. I wasn't doing every little thing. The email thing, going back to that a little bit, you know, and so
Most people get the, well, I can't hire people because I don't have the revenue. I don't have the revenue because I'm not working hard enough. And then they're just kind of stuck in that, which is, again, I am going to stand by like the joy and fulfillment, having an emotional goal for entrepreneurs. You just have to have it because, I mean, for humans, we're emotional creatures. There's nothing that we ever do that's not to achieve an emotional state. It's not for things. It's for the emotional state those things give us. So like if we can set the joy and fulfillment or whatever those emotional states, I think it helps. But I'm just trying to, again, like give advice to another entrepreneur and that was in my shoes, like, is it worth it? And my advice is I absolutely don't think it's ever worth working more than 40, maybe 50 hours a week. And if it takes longer, it takes longer. And if it doesn't work out, it doesn't work out. But if it doesn't work out in the confines of what you, like, I don't think it was, I don't know, meant to be. So kind of weird. And then that's going back and like, okay, are you intuition versus logic and going with the flow of life and being open to opportunities? And, you know, I'm exploring that because I didn't believe in intuition 2 years ago. I didn't know what it was. And now I'm like, okay, maybe this is real.
Maybe there's something to this. I definitely think if you look at the vast majority of circumstances where an entrepreneur is working on their vacations and holidays and weekend and all these crazy things that people do, I would say 99.9% of them, you might even argue 100% of them, they don't have to do it, can wait, for sure. I would agree with that. And you know, I think it's something you have to teach yourself and you have to train your mind in a sense of how to turn it off, you know, because when you're building a business, it is, I think, kind of normal when people are going through the trenches of the business for their minds to develop to the standpoint that it's all they're thinking about. They have a hard time disconnecting from that. It's a skill.
It goes all the way to sleep. I mean, it's absolutely, it's on your mind all the time. And so you're always wanting to work. And then because you're always on to work, you're training your brain to continue with those thought patterns. And it's a vicious cycle up until the point that now it affects your sleep. And I run into that. I mean, I hit that as well. I couldn't sleep because the brain's going too fast on what am I going to do tomorrow? And how am I going to solve this? And, you know, so do you have any advice on that, on how to turn off the mental activity around work when you're not working?
Yeah, love this question. And I think it's so important. One of my mentors, you know, kind of phrased it one time as, you need to find a way to not be at work, be guilty when you're at work that you're not at home, and not be guilty when you're at home that you're not at work. And what I found is the thing that allowed me to really kind of, I guess, sort of figure it out. I'm not perfect. No, I'm not even close to perfect, but I'm better today than I've ever been, I think, at this. And that's that I've built the infrastructure in my company to allow things to get done without me having to do it. And I think, to me, that's a really great place to get to. Not every entrepreneur is going to get there in their business, but you know, I've limited the things that I touch on a day-to-day basis personally. And then I set very dedicated schedules. So everything for me is schedule based. You know, if something's in my schedule, terrific. We were talking before we kind of went on, you know, I don't manage my schedule. I have someone that manages my schedule. I don't even touch it. I don't even know. I don't want to know until the day of. And so for me, everything is time blocked. Everything, you know, and including my family time, you know. So if I have something like a family outing, if I'm going to go to my daughter's gymnastics class or her swimming class or anything like that and watch her, that's time blocked. And nobody's going to call me. Nobody's going to interrupt that. That's a schedule. And to me, I take it with the same amount of urgency as I would anything else. A very important business meeting, you know, whatever it might be. And so that's helped me a lot personally. I know everybody's different. Everybody has, you know, different strokes for different folks on the best way to manage that. But, you know, and I've also tried to stay off my phone when I'm with my family. Like, I think being present was a battle for me for a long time. And I think to me, the key is, you know, putting the phone down, not compromising that time, not taking calls or anything like that. And I think, you know, it's like an appointment in a sense. You know, this is
you're family treating time. As like this is just like I give. Yeah, I love that. I mean, that's how I got. I mean, you set boundaries, and the best way to set boundaries for me as well was just the calendar. Mm-hmm. If it's on the calendar, it's happening. If it's on the calendar, it's not happening. And don't put stuff on my calendar when I don't want it to happen, you know?
Yep. Yeah.
And it makes it anyways. And then I would say, to piggyback on it, that's only one part. So that's how to not work more, but it doesn't solve the, okay, so I'm not at work, mm-hmm. but I'm still thinking about work. And then you set the phone down. That's I think is the key. Because if you have the phone, again, you look at your thought patterns and what you're training, your brain's always changing, right? The thoughts are always changing. But from one day to the next, it's like 80 or 90% of your thoughts are the same. So if you have your phone and you're always responding to Slack messages and emails, even outside of work, you're just training your brain to keep doing that. If you can turn it off and like actually turn it off or leave it somewhere for hours, then you're training your brain. Even if you're thinking of that, you can't act on it. And it doesn't reinforce that thought pattern. So I'm a big proponent of that as well. Like you, not only you have to set the schedule, set the phone down and be a, like, do something else with your mind. I usually do like either red light therapy at my house, I have a sauna or cold plunge, something after, usually physical, or I'll take a nap. I take a nap almost every day. I've already taken a nap today.
Very nice. Very nice.
Because that'll reset, at least for me, like nervous system and everything. Like it just calms it down. And usually in working, you know, you're a little bit more, at least me, I'm a little bit more energized. It's more of the the sympathetic nervous system sometimes, especially if you're a little bit more stressed, where any of those activities is more rest, relaxation, parasympathetic nervous system. Anyways, we've gone over by a little bit, by a lot, but I've enjoyed the conversation and diving in.
Yeah, me too.
So Christian, thank you a ton. Where can our listeners connect with you?
Yes, the best place to find us is just on our website, the Everything Senior Insurance website. If you're an insurance agent and you're listening, or maybe you were interested in becoming an insurance agent, we run a Facebook group called Seven Figure Medicare Agent. It's a very large online community of Medicare agents from all over the country. It's closing in. It's about 100 members away at this point from 10,000 members.
Sweet. Dang.
We have a great YouTube channel too, just my name, Christian Brindle. We put out free trainings and everything like that. So those would probably be the best three places.